Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back into Sports Talk, talking a little bit about the NFL draft to help us break that down. Ryan Roberts, NFL draft and college football analyst for A to Z Sports on the line. How's it going today, Ryan?
Everything's good, man. Everything's good. How are you?
Doing great. Still, you know, digesting everything the Saints were able to do in the NFL draft this year. It took a lot of us by surprise. They held on to all 9 of their picks. And right now, definitely the biggest buzz has been taking the quarterback in the second round, who has been getting most of the attention, which is kind of sad for me for the kid in the, you know, the 9th overall selection, Kelvin Banks Jr., 6'5", 350-pound tackle. That definitely is a need on this team. I felt like they were going to go with the trenches, whether it was offensive, defensive line, but it didn't help me from maybe dreaming about someone, you know, like the tight end on the board, Tyler Warren, or even like a Jalen Walker. But in the end, the Saints end up going offensive line, Kelvin Banks Jr. And just curious your thoughts overall on the big Texas tackle.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think he has one of the highest floors of any offensive tackle in this class, which I feel like down the stretch, people got kind of bored of talking about him. He was a former five-star. He's been starting to this freshman year, his freshman All-American the last couple of years. So, like, he's been a known commodity for a long time. And unfortunately, like, some people just get bored of talking about those types of players, especially if it may be his ceiling might not be as high as, like, an Armin Membu from Missouri, so people didn't want to talk about him as much. But I really think that the Saints need stability, you know? Like, I think that's one thing that they definitely need on both sides of the ball. I thought it was going to be either offensive line or pass rusher with that first pick, and obviously they they had the hole at right tackle, and they want to, you know, Talisi Fuanga, who was a very talented offensive lineman in his own right in last year's class out of Oregon State. Like, I think you wanted to find a bookend to him potentially and to continue to build up this team, because unfortunately with how things have kind of figured out, I mean, you're an organization right now that's in some bad cap situations. You need to be able to hit on some draft picks, and I think that Kelvin Banks brings a high floor, physical, has the length, has the athleticism. He might not be as exciting as some other offensive tackles that were in the class, but I would argue that he has just about as high a floor as anybody as well.
I agree 1,000%, Ryan. And that's the word that kept kind of coming up, was safe with Kelvin Banks. Like, everyone thought of him as like a really safe prospect. Also very high character guy. We got to interview him after the draft. Very, very nice dude. And, you know, just as you mentioned, pairing him with Taliese Fuaga, I think is you're getting bookend tackles and back-to-back years of using a top 15 pick on the offensive line. If both of them hit, that is a great commodity to have. Now, my question for you is the kind of plan for someone like Kelvin Banks Jr., who was a 3-year starter at left tackle for Texas. It feels like the Saints, you know, playing Taliese Fuaga at left tackle last year, his natural position is right tackle. That's what he played at Oregon State. So having both of them, you know, leaving Kelvin Banks at left tackle, moving Taliese Fuaga back to right tackle, feels like it could be a good move.
I mean, it makes the most logical sense, obviously, for the background you're talking about. I mean, Fuaga was a fantastic right tackle. Funny enough, I just wrote an article about his teammate at Oregon State, Joshua Gray, who was actually the left tackle on the other side, who just went on draft, who I think is a pretty nice value in this class. But I really think that it makes the most logical sense. I mean, some people think it's so rudimentary, right? Just talking about like switching from one stance to the other. But some guys just can't do it. And I don't know if Kelvin Banks is one of those guys, but I do know that Fuaga has a lot of film playing right tackle. I mean, he's a multi-year starter at Oregon State playing the right tackle position, and Kelvin Banks is a 3-year starter playing left tackle. So if that's the decision that they make, I think it's a very solid one. It makes a ton of sense. And I think that overall, whatever happens to this quarterback position, whether it's Derek Carr for the, you know, next few years, or whether it's Tyler Shuck or whatever the heck ends up happening there, I do think that you feel pretty good about your offensive tackle position that you're in today.
You definitely mentioned the main man right there, Tyler Shuck. Everybody's been talking about it here. The second-round pick out of Louisville, quarterback. The biggest knock has been injuries and definitely age. So, you know, 25, going to be 26 in September. That's been the knock against Tyler Shuck. But as for his game, what do you like about this QB coming to New Orleans?
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a lot to like. There really is. I mean, he's 6'5", right around. He's 220-plus pounds. He's a good athlete. He ran 4.6-something at the combine. He's got, outside of maybe Cam Ward, he might have the strongest arm in this class as well. And I'll say this, like, his it's been a fascinating career, obviously. Started at Oregon, Texas Tech, ended up at Louisville, banged up along the way the entire time, except for this year, right? And he finally puts together a full year, and you see the talent that he has, which once made him a top 100 overall recruit coming out of high school. So he definitely has talent. There's no doubt. And the cool thing is, too, for just keeping it from a positive scope for a second, people will use the age thing as a big negative, and I understand why, but two things to really consider there is, one, the quarterback position has a longer shelf life just naturally comparative to others, and also, I would argue, even though Tyler Shuck's going to be 26, he still has developmental track here because he hasn't played a ton of football. He's been banged up so much, I don't think you're getting a finished product that's just old. I think that you're still getting a guy that a year from now, 2 years from now, can still be a ton better, man. Like, I still think there's a lot of developmental upside there. So if you have a good foundation around him, you trust your program, you trust the coaching staff, developmental staff, everything involved, I do think there's a lot that you can still get out of a Tyler Shuck. So I am excited for the upside. Obviously, there's some negatives behind it as well that you always have to consider, but I do think there's a lot to like if you're a Saints fan, if you trust what is being built around him.
And then the very next pick that the Saints made, they went back to the Texas well, and that's something that, you know, Mike Dettillier and I have talked about, that with Steve Sarkisian and how he's kind of transformed that Texas program, a lot of it starts in the trenches. And so you get your offensive tackle, the left tackle for 3 years there, Kelvin Banks. But then in the third round, you get Vernon Broughton, who combined with Alfred Collins, who was, I think, a second round pick this past draft. Those two guys were terrors on the interior defensive line, and they just tore up opposing offensive linemen all season long. But a guy that's, you know, maybe built to potentially be a nose tackle at the next level, I really like Vernon Broughton. I want to get your thoughts on him because it just feels like another really strong pick.
Yeah, so, I mean, Texas with the interior defensive lineman the last couple of years has been pretty bananas, man. Like, you talk about, like, Byron Murphy and Tavondre Sweat, and that now what you're doing this year with Vernon Broughton and Alfred Collins. I mean, they even had a third guy in this draft as well. So, I mean, their defensive tackle room the last couple of years has been pretty crazy, and it doesn't look like it's necessarily slowing down anytime soon. Broughton out of Alfred Collins and him – Alfred Collins, because of the length that he has and the body type he was moved around a little bit more. Broughton was too. I mean, like, Broughton played some snaps from anything from a zero all the way out to like a 4-4 at times as well. But he is much more a guy that I think you want to keep a little bit more condensed, because the best parts of his game is the dirty work that he does. He's super physical at the point of attack. He can anchor against double teams. He can split double teams occasionally for some tackle for loss production. But, like, this is a guy that I think you're drafting similar to Kelvin Banks in the sense of you want a higher floor guy in this building to potentially raise the floor of the entire position. And I think that's what Broughton brings. Some people will say, you know, 70-something overall was a little bit high potentially, and I think that argument is fine and it's valid. We can have it. But ultimately, that's what I think the Saints are trying to find, is those guys that really do just kind of raise that floor from all over this roster to try to fill in those gaps. And I think that he is a guy that's going to play a little bit more condensed. But if your linebackers are having big days or your defensive ends are getting a whole lot more one-on-one opportunities, I think that you're going to be able to go back to the film after the game and say Vernon Broughton brought a lot of those great intangibles and the small things that maybe people don't always give him credit for.
Broughton brought it. Try saying that a bunch. The other pick in the third round for this black and gold squad, they went to Virginia to pick up safety Jonas Sanker. And while football wasn't great in Virginia last year, at least Jonas Sanker put up some pretty impressive tape.
Yeah, no, Sager was my favorite pick of the entire draft, to be honest, compared to, like, the value of where he was selected comparatively to where I thought he could be selected. I thought he could have been selected a little bit higher because he's had a great process. I mean, he went to the combine, and the one thing that people were interested in seeing about Sanker, because the film has been really good the last 2 years. I mean, he's made a ton of tackles, been around the football constantly. They wanted to know what type of athlete he was, and running in the 4.4s was a great number for him, obviously. But this is one of those two high safeties that loves to be able to play short zone, buzz down, play some slot reps at times as well. Like, he's a very versatile player, not necessarily like a true free safety type where I'm going to rotate him to the middle of the field and ask him to be a single high guy. But I really do think that this kid is a starter relatively early in his career. He could have a ton of success. He, I think, was kind of one of the more underrated players in the draft, and I think that that was maybe arguably the Saints' biggest value in the entire crop.
You know, Ryan, are you a big draft grades guy? I know that some people, it's a very mixed thing. Like, people either like it and they love seeing, oh, what did this guy give the Saints draft? But others are just kind of looking at it like you got to see him play first before you can even, like, hazard a grade. So what are your thoughts on the draft grades before I ask you my next question here?
So it's going to be sacrilegious being in the industry that I'm in, but I hate draft grades. I actually hate it. I think it's very – so this is my two biggest pet peeves, and they all kind of relatively round about the same point here, is that I hate – or I dislike, I should say. I shouldn't say hate. I dislike when people pound their chest after somebody gets picked in a specific range, and they're like, oh, man, I hit that eval. Like, that guy's a first rounder. And I'm like, guys, that's not – evaluation. Evaluation happens after the player plays in the NFL, and you see a few years from now if you were right, if that guy did develop into a solid starter or key reserve or long-term backup or like whatever you evaluated him as. That is when you find success as an evaluator. And it's the same thing with draft grades. Like, we do it because I think it's a cool exercise to a degree, because you just kind of look back at like potential fits and guys' ranges and where you perceive there to be value or not value. Like, I think that that's an interesting thing, but we hyper focus on so much right now. Team X is saying, oh man, everyone told me I got an A draft grade. It's amazing. But then 3 years from now, we might look back at it and say, like, everyone was just wrong on that draft. Like, they weren't developed properly. They weren't used correctly. It was not a good fit, player X, into that organization. So I really do dislike it. I know I got a little long-winded there, but, like, that's actually one of my bigger pet peeves in the industry. I can't say that.
No, listen, I agree 1,000%, Ryan. And that's what Mike Bethilia and I were saying, you know, a couple days ago, that it's just kind of stupid to give out draft grades when you don't see the player until, you know, the year after. Anyways, but I want to ask you actually about the NFC South, because this one was really interesting to see how people reacted to it. The Falcons trading back up into the first round, giving up a first round pick the next year in 2026 to get James Pierce Jr. with the Rams. So, and I know that, like, it's a little bit of a different value chart than what happened the pick before it, when the Giants had traded up to 25 with the Texans to go get Jackson Dart, because the Giants were moving up 10 spots versus the Falcons moving up close to 20 spots. But at the same time, two third round picks for the Giants to move up into the first round to get Dart versus giving up a first-round pick in 2026 for the Falcons to move up and get James Pierce. I thought it was pretty interesting. Definitely questionable value.
Yeah, no, it was. It was. Because initially, this was my impulse, and I was kind of watching it mostly with, like, the volume off for a couple minutes because we were doing some, like, reaction videos. When I saw the Falcons jump back in to take James Pierce Jr. after taking Jalen Walker, I was actually very impressed for a second. I was like, hey, James Pierce Jr. is rough around the edges. He has some question marks, but if you're able to maintain and keep his eyes forward and keep him clean and all those types of things, like if you're really able to help him mature, I think he's a top 10 overall talent in this class. So, like, at first I was like, wow, that's awesome. Good for the Falcons. And then I saw the value that they had to get back, right? And I'm just like, look, there's a possibility that he matures and he ends up being as good as he potentially could be, that upside that we always talk about, but there is a lot of volatility to a James Pierce Jr. He could be as good as he wants to be, or he could be as bad as you let him be, right? Like, there is a lot of – there's not much in-between ground on this. Like, this is a boomer-bust player, in my opinion, in this class. I still like the gamble in a vacuum, but I don't like the gamble for as much as they gave up for it, right? So – yes, it is a big gamble. It's a big risk. It could end up working out, but that is a lot to trade for a guy that does have some maturity question marks and some character things that people have continued to talk about throughout this process.
Sticking with the NFC South, I felt like every team, unfortunately, around the Saints, they had a pretty good draft. Tampa Bay, Carolina. Just curious your thoughts on what the Panthers and Bucks did.
Yeah, so I've been one of the guys, I don't know if we've ever talked about it on this show, but like I'm not as high on Tet McMillan, the wide receiver out of Arizona, as some people are. Okay. I think he's a good receiver. I'd be okay with taking him in the mid-first round to somewhere in the 20s. Like, I'm good with that value. But number 8 overall was just a little bit too rich for my blood. But that being said, I thought the rest of the Panthers draft was A+. Like, getting the pass rushers on day 2, Skeleton and Princely Umon Mielin, I thought was tremendous. Kind of working down their entire draft, I thought they hit it out of the park after the first pick. So I looked past it. I'm just like, even if I don't love the Tet pick, that is a great draft. Like, really good job by the Carolina Panthers, in my opinion. And I think Tampa Bay, someone actually asked me a question the other day about the next teams to be in that tier of, wow, that team always drafts well, so they're always good. And I think Jason Light is going towards that right now with Tampa Bay. I mean, that draft, I think it took people by surprise with the Emeka Buka selection at 19, but you have to consider Chris Godwin is coming back from an injury. He's 31 years old. Like, there's a lot there, right, as far as like the long-term. Mike Evans isn't a young guy either, so they're preparing for the future. But then to get the corners they did at day 2, to get Benjamin Morrison and get Jacob Parrish back-to-back, get David Walker, the pass rusher out of Central Arkansas early on day 3. I thought both those teams really did knock it out of the park, man. So a little bit unconventional for both in theory in the first round, but I think the just the overall draft for each team, I thought they did exceptionally well, each of them.
I'm so happy Emeka went in the top 20. Now, for Saints fans, it's not a good thing that he went to the Buccaneers, but in the pre-draft process, Ryan, we kept talking about him, and the word that kept coming up is polished, right? How polished he was, yes, as a player. And yes, he was like overlooked because he played with so many Ohio State great receivers, but he was fantastic in his own right. And, you know, maybe at some point he was a little bit overlooked in the process, but at the same time, like, he's an NFL-ready route runner, a guy that catches everything thrown his way. He's going to be, you know, a terror for the Tampa Bay offense for years to come, unfortunately, for Saints fans.
Yeah, no, he's a really good player, man. I literally wrote an article the other day about that that Ohio State room that had him, Chris Olave, had Garrett Wilson, it had Marvin Harrison Jr., and I think Jameson Williams had just transferred out, right? So, like, it's easy for a player like Emeka, who's not quite as dynamic as a couple of those guys I mentioned, to get underrated a little bit. And that's what he is. And he's also a fourth-year guy, right, on a team that guys have just traditionally been 3-and-done, you know, at least in recent years. So I think we undervalued him tremendously. And then this year, the most quiet 80-catch, like, almost 1,200-yard season I can remember for a player that goes in the first round, because everyone just wanted to talk about Jeremiah Smith, obviously, right? So it's unfortunate he's been very undervalued, but he's a leading receiver in the history of a great developer of wide receivers, and he's going to be a very high-floor player. So he might never be a 1,500-plus-yard-a-season guy, a guy that's, you know, perennial, all-pro type of dude, but it would shock me if he wasn't a 70, 80-catch, 900,000 your receiver basically every season. He's that type of high floor player, in my opinion.
Ryan, now that the 2025 draft is in the books, how long till you start putting your 2026 board together?
2 weeks ago, man.
Wow, okay.
We're in the weeds. We're in the weeds already. Yeah, it's so funny. I always try to get my work done super early, and so I get a couple weeks before the draft so I can just start the game planning. So, yeah, we're already into 2026, and it's not going to slow down anytime soon.
Awesome stuff, man. Always appreciate the time. Thank you, Ryan Roberts from A to Z Sports. Check out his work there, NFL draft and college football analyst. Have a good one, Ryan. Enjoy the night.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Thanks, Ryan.